This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Sunday Skate with Scott McLaughlin, Andrew Razor Raycroft, and Bridget Prue on WEEI.
A convincing win in Toronto. The Bruins can close it out Tuesday night at TD Garden. 3-1 the final and 3-1 in the series.
Welcome into Sunday Skate. Indeed, 3-1 the series. Bruins win both games in Toronto, games 3 and 4. 3-1 final Saturday night. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue. You can join us 617-779-7937. Text in 37937. Guys, a lot to get to as the Bruins now have a chance to close out the Leafs on Tuesday night at TD Garden. Razor, you're free. We don't have to talk goalie rotation this week.
We're still going to talk goalies.
We'll definitely talk goalies because Jeremy Swayman has been awesome.
We don't have to talk goalie rotation ever again, so it's perfect.
Well, hold on.
No, it'll never happen again, so let's we'll just move
so
on.
So we're not going to see Ullmark.
We're going to see Ullmark again. We're just not going to see the
back-to-back.
True rotation. Yeah,
I'm not taking a victory lap. We're just never seeing a rotation, so good.
Scott was going to. If it turned out the way that he expected, he was going to.
I knew, but I was never...
I almost thought I was gonna have my shot that game too. Like when that second period when Ullmark's making crazy save after crazy save, like I was so ready to take one. But yep. You know, they slip, they lose that game. Swayman wins the last two.
Were you at all surprised, Razor, with the decision, or was that so common sense that it was obvious?
Yeah.
To go back to Swayman for game four.
So common. So and yeah. Let's wait. Let's do this later because it's really not the story. It really isn't the story.
No, the story. I would say the two stars of both of these two games in Toronto, Swayman and Nett, but number one even above that, Brad Marchand.
Yeah,
who's just been excellent. 3 points in game three, two more in game four, leading with his play, leading by example, getting under the Leafs' skin. You know, we're gonna play the Sheldon Keefe cut that everyone's heard because it's the quote of the series now at this point. But he has completely taken over the series. And going in, you know, he's probably not, at this point in his career, he's probably not the guy you would have picked if you said one player is really going to take over. You would have thought, well, maybe it's Matthews with Toronto. Maybe it's Pastrnak with Boston. But this has just been outstanding series for Brad Marchand.
It feels like Marchand's got him right where he wants him. Like, he's been getting the better of that Bertuzzi feud that's going on. He's definitely been getting under everyone's skin. He's been making Sheldon Keefe say stupid things in the post-game press conferences, but he's been great. He's been bringing a lot of energy, and you kind of saw it even ramp up more on the road.
No, it was awesome. Awesome, incredible, impressive, captain-like. It just... His intensity, his emotion, his passion, and his ability to drag everybody to that level was as good as it gets. It really was. For and again, we'll get to the, but just his, he knows exactly, he knew exactly where he needed to take his emotion level after game two. Again, I thought he was good in game one. I thought he was good in game two. Like, I thought he was doing the right things. Certainly in game one, Domi, we talked about all that last week. Domi going at him, like, what was going on? He responded to that perfect, and he responded to the loss even better. And Montgomery talked about it, him in the morning skate, being at a level and showing the younger guys the level that was necessary. You saw it on the ice right at the start of game three, his physicality, but not getting out of everything after the whistles. It was awesome, and it was so obvious how great of a leader he was in those two games, and I can only imagine the confidence that's giving him and giving the team, knowing they can follow this guy. And I think it's really important. Like, he had an unbelievable January, right? He was incredible in January, really clipping along. All right, he's going to get to 410 goals this season. It's another 80-90 point season, and then he scores 5 goals in February, March, and April. So going into the playoffs, you think, like you said, Scott, it wasn't your. I wasn't expecting him to be right behind Connor McDavid after 4 games in scoring in the National Hockey League. You're hoping that he can chip in. You're hoping he gets that wrister over the shoulder. Like, that's what you need him to do. But to continue that and to have points in each game, and like you said, 5 points in Toronto, can't be understated. It really can't be understated. The steps that this guy's taken from all the way through his career, but now the step that he's taken as a captain that we saw early in this season and how he kind of made this his team, and now he's taken it through 4 games of the playoffs. I'm not going to overstate that either. He's got to close this series out and continue, but this is what the guys before him have done with their teams in the playoffs. And he was number one star. Right? Swayman was good. He was number one star, no question, over the last 2 games.
Yeah, you mentioned right behind McDavid. So Marchand, 8 points in 4 games. McDavid's got 9 in Edmonton series. And that's it. And 6 of Marchand's points on the power play. And that's been so crucial in the series as well. He has 2 power play goals, including 1 Saturday night. 4 power play assists. We know how bad the Bruins' power play looked down the stretch. And look, there were many problems, but he was one of them. Like, there were times on the power play where he wasn't looking to shoot, or plays would kind of die on his stick. He'd hold onto the puck too long. And I just think you see so much more urgency where he's really stepped up and he's been the driving force of that power play. I mean, I think 3 of those power play goals came without Pastrnak on the ice. So he's been the leader in that way. And the Bruins' power play in this series, now 6-for-13. We can get into the flip side of it, the penalty kill as well, which is 13-for-14, limiting the Leafs' power play. But Bruins' power play has been incredible, and we didn't see this for a month down the stretch until maybe the very last game of the season when Montgomery changed up the units. But everyone has kicked it up, and that's another area where I think Marchand has really led the way, just with the right approach of urgency of what to do with the puck and a stick, looking to shoot, buries that one-timer last night for the second goal that puts the Bruins up 2-0. And, yeah, I know there was a lot of game left after it, but, like, that felt like so much of a dagger. Like, the things were already kind of quiet in Scotiabank Arena up there in Toronto, and that really sort of took the air out for pretty much the rest of the night.
Yeah, and I saw someone tweeted at us that the atmosphere there was just awful, and that they were piping in the crowd noise that was the Go Leafs Go chant. I don't know, Razor, do they actually pipe in noise? Like, remember during the pandemic when there was no fans and some rinks and some stadiums would just pipe in a little bit of crowd noise and make it sound louder than it is? Is that something that they actually do?
No, they have like the it's like the outside, but it's not like actual,
it's not
clapping.
Like fans going,
no,
it's
no,
like
the, no, the,
like,
no. It's like,
it'd be like the like that encouragement or whatever.
Yes,
yeah.
That's what it is. It's the well, listen, you're right on the shooting on the Leafs PK is so bad. So that's also helped, right? Like that's so, but it's the mentality. And listen, Brad's missed that one timer a lot over the last 3 months. He's hit it over the net. He hasn't got all of it. He hammered that one. The wrister the other night over the glove isn't a power play goal, but he hasn't hit that shot in a really long time. So again, it's his urgency in those plays and recognizing you don't get many opportunities, even on a bat, even against a terrible Toronto penalty kill in the playoffs, you just don't get many of those. And he recognizes the moment of that being a dagger. Cause it felt the Leafs have only scored 3 goals once in the last 11 playoff games with this core. Like it's not like it went back to like 1960. These guys have only scored 3 goals in a playoff game once in the last 11 times. So the second goal was like the winner. They're not getting more than that. They just can't get more than that, which is a whole nother story and bananas to think. And I know we're going to get to the penalty kill, but this still, I think this tags into Marcia and Moore. He's the first. It's Charlie and Brad. First one. They're the ones killing the first 35, 40 seconds of these penalty over in Toronto.
He's the first
one over. They've been ragging the puck. It looks like him and Patrice again, the old days of him penalty killing. And they got away from that. They had to save some of his legs for that in the regular season. And that's come back. And I think that's part of his game that keeps him energized in blocking shots. And just it's literally the full package of leadership and skill and taking his game to another level and showing everyone else what kind of level you need to get to come playoff time. You can't, if you go into the regular season the same way or the playoffs the same way you did in the regular season, you're so far behind. And we've seen that from the Leafs, I think.
Yeah, in game three, that goal he scored to make it 3-2 in game three was, it just felt like, okay, that's going to do it. Like you almost knew that the Leafs at that point, they did have a little bit of a push after that. And they had a strong push in the third period in game four that eventually I felt like the Bruins got a little bit lucky where the media timeout kind of fell in perfectly where there was some momentum for the Leafs. And then all of a sudden you kind of just saw it kind of trickle out after that. But you're right. Both of those goals in game three and in game four by Marchand just felt like such big exclamation points on what the Bruins were doing right.
Well, and another thing that killed the Leafs' momentum in the third period was William Nylander just tackles Jake DeBrusk and takes an offensive zone penalty when the Leafs had the Bruins pinned in there for like a minute. DeBrusk doesn't have a stick.
No, he couldn't have done anything.
Like, this is, Razor, you mentioned the Leafs' penalty kill being bad, but, you know, another clear aspect that's emerging in the series is the Leafs just being unable to get out of their own way. That's now 6 offensive zone penalties they've taken in this series, and it was a Marner offensive zone penalty hauling down Charlie McAvoy that leads to the power play that Marchand scores on. That one in the third period by Nylander kind of kills their momentum. The Bruins don't score on that power play, but Leafs really, you know, and then the Leafs actually get their own power play after that. Chance to cut it to 3-2 late, but again, the Bruins penalty kill just excellent. The Leafs got 0 shots on goal on that final power play, pushing for their lives, like, you know, desperately need a goal and they can't even land a single shot on that power play late in the third period. Obviously Austin Matthews' absence is a factor there. He leaves the game at the second intermission due to illness. Sheldon Keefe, Toronto's coach, said doctors pulled him. So, you know, obviously that's gotta be something pretty serious. You can't dismiss that because obviously Austin Matthews was terrific in game two and was the biggest reason the Leafs won that game and hasn't looked the same since, but still doesn't take very much away from what the Bruins are doing and have done these last 2 games.
No, it doesn't. It wouldn't have mattered the way they were playing last night, whether Matthews came back in the third. For the beast that we saw in game 2, 3, and 4 was not the same. He hasn't skated all week. He hasn't done pregame skates. He hasn't practiced. No one's seen him. So he's sick. Like there's absolutely no doubt. You could tell.
Yeah, his face was bright red. Like they showed him like a close up of him sometimes right about to take a face off, and his face was beat red, and he just looked bad.
Yeah, he wasn't able to, you know, there was no hitting, there was no energy to his game. He was trying to get shots on goal, but...
But once again, with the Leafs fans, all I could see after the game was, oh, you know, he gave up. Like, he did. It was too late. He knew the game was over. He wanted to go home. Someone said he's putting his earrings in. Someone said he's getting his tea time ready. Like, that's what the Leafs fan base does. They were doing the same thing to Nylander earlier in the series, and now they were doing the same thing to Matthews.
Yeah, he's not going to take as much heat that for that. You know, like, whatever on X. Who cares what's going on there? I mean, that's the – I don't – like, the fan base is going to – Matthew, if he's that sick, it's 3-0. You know you have to play. Like, there's no point of him playing there. We could have a comeback. They weren't coming back in that game. There's no way they were coming back in that game. So, rest – you know, get him out of the rink. Get him home. Get him hooked up to an IV for the next 3 days because – he needs to be a monster in game five for them. The other guys will take a bunch of heat, but for him, it was just, he wasn't 100%. And that's, that doesn't help the Leafs when the only reason they've won one of these games is because of him.
Do you think though, that there are other players in the league that would have tried to play through that? And that's kind of where the criticism comes from. Like, okay, we know there are players like Patrice Bergeron that exist and players that understand it's playoffs and that they put their body, they really work their bodies basically to the breaking point in order to try to win a playoff series. Because they definitely needed Matthews in that game.
He played the game, though. That's the point.
To get back into it in the third period.
No. I think the whole mythology of Patrice and the whole thing, if it was game four, Patrice had broken lungs and broken ribs and broken everything, and they were down 3-0 going into the third, that he probably wouldn't have played that game, you know, that 20 minutes, and they would have tried to – you try and find rest. The same way they pulled a goaltender. Like, they were doing a bunch of things to try and get back into the game. So, no, I don't – like, there's lots of guys that have missed periods in playoff hockey that are considered warriors and, So, who knows? So for all we know, he couldn't even go out there because he was puking his guts out, right? Like, there's certain scenarios that are of sickness that, unfortunately, no matter, you know, how tough you are, you can't play hockey. So we won't hear any criticism from real people.
Real people.
for not playing the 20 minutes.
The non-Twitter.
Yeah, like the bot.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah, the bot.
So one of the reasons, and we'll definitely get into this next segment, but one of the reasons that game was out of reach for the Leafs, you know, listen, 3 goals in third period, normally maybe not entirely insurmountable, but the way Jeremy Swayman's been playing absolutely is. Like, you're just not scoring 3 in a period on him right now. He's been too good. He's been pretty clearly the best goalie in the entire Stanley Cup playoffs. You look across the league, I want to get into that next, his play, but it's just been awesome. We're off and running here on Sunday Skate. Again, you can join us, 617-779-7937. Text in 37937. Bridget has you trending. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you look at the impact of Brad Marchand tonight, whether it's on the score sheet or off the score sheet as well, just getting under guys' skin, what do you do to contain him going forward?
Well, you got to play through it. You got to recognize, you know, he's a world-class player, both in ability and in how he plays. I mean, the gamesmanship and everything, it's world-class. And he's been in the league long enough, as you can see. He gets calls. It's unbelievable, actually. How it goes. You know, we got to play through that. You got to play through that stuff. I don't think there's another player in this series that gets away with taking out Bertuzzi's legs the way that he does. There's not one other player in the series that gets away with that, but he does. Because, it's an art, and he's elite at it. So we have to manage our way through that, avoid putting ourselves in situations where he can put us in those spots. And then as far as this game, I think we've managed that pretty well for the most part. Obviously tonight we make him a mistake at a key time that allows him to get the winner.
There it is, the soundbite of the series. Sheldon Keefe after game three talking about Brad Marchand somehow getting all the calls, even though he's actually not drawing penalties in this series.
It's unbelievable.
Even though the Leafs got 5 power plays in that game, they got another 3 Saturday. Like, you got to play that game to an extent, but I don't think Sheldon Keefe had much of a leg to stand on there, and don't think it worked because Marchand, didn't get off his game at all Saturday, just continued to dominate. And I thought one of the funniest moments Saturday, so I think it might have been Edmondson, got like right in Marchand's face, and they were kind of like staring at each other, but it didn't really come to shoves. And then like 4 or 5 other guys kind of came in and scrummed it up, and Marchand just skated away, like just calmly skated away. It was like, I'm not doing that.
No, he's done. He's been right there, and he goes low on Bertuzzi last night. Like, that is, it's not a penalty. It's just perfect. It's not a penalty, but it's so annoying. It's right in front of the Leafs bench. It's right at the end of a period, so he knows he can just get off the ice and get away from it. You know it drives Bertuzzi nuts. He can't do anything about it. It was like all of these little plays, like the elbow in game three that he got away with. He's done it perfectly. He just couldn't do it better. Like that little brother that annoys you so much, but he's good at everything.
But he's the older brother technically, because he's like one of the older guys in the league at this point. But he's still a pain, and he did get away with that one elbow for sure. But when you think back to like, it just felt so out of touch to say Marchand gets all the calls, because in his, like, historically, Marchand has been on the other side of that so many more times than getting the calls. It just felt like, okay, well, it honestly felt like he was watching a different game than everyone else.
Well, and Sheldon, again, somebody should have grabbed Sheldon. Somebody should have told Sheldon before the series started that And most coaches do, like, coaches typically don't talk about other players. Like, you really shouldn't talk about other players. And in this situation, it should be in his coach's room in big red marker before he walks out on the ice. Don't talk about Brad Marchand. Like, don't bring up his name. Go in that post game. Say, listen, there's a lot of plays out there. They're on the edge. We could have, I know we got 5 power plays and our power play stinks, but there's other things outside of the play. I'm not even looking for power plays. I would just like this to be called fair and evenly to protect my players. The safety of my players is at risk here. And kind of take it that way and go that way. Don't ever mention Brad Marchand, because now you're just feeding him even more. Now you really know it. And it's hard to do because, again, he's so good at it. And you want to get him. You want to strangle him. You're just so frustrated by him by the end of that game that Sheldon can't control himself. He couldn't control himself to go there. And he, like you said, it's not right. Like, what he's saying wasn't correct. They had 5 power plays. Brad never gets away with anything. Like, all of these things. And now you just start. Now, somehow, Brad is now, after the game, changed the focus and made Sheldon Keefe look like a bad coach, too. Somehow that happened, all in game three. It's wild.
Then Marchand had a press conference shortly after the Sheldon Keefe one, where he addressed pretty much, because some people listened to the Sheldon Keefe one first, came and kind of asked him about it in a nicer way. And he just really didn't have anything to add to it. He just answered it politely, like didn't really talk about Sheldon Keefe at all in the answer. It just felt like he's winning. He's having the time of his life. And I think that Leafs fan, like, their worst case scenario for this series was that they, first of all, paid all that money to go watch those 2 home games and have Brad Marchand be the star.
Well, and like, when the Bruins get asked about, like you said, like, Marchand doesn't directly address it, just talks about the game. Montgomery praises Marchand for, knowing where the line is and not crossing it and, just stepping up his game and like completely ignoring Sheldon Keefe's comments directly. Uh-huh. But yeah, you got you know, a little bit of war words. I mean, Montgomery did drop in the, you know, when he sees Domi bump Swayman between periods, you know, makes me think maybe he's in their head. Like, you know, so there's a little bit there from the Bruins side. And then Sheldon Keefe responds to that. I thought, you know, not really in the best way either, where he's like, well, if bumping a guy means you're in their head, then everyone's in everyone's head, or, you know, whatever he said. So this is like, this is the sideshow of the playoffs. Like, I love this stuff. Like, the coaches just going back and forth and someone trying to work the refs. I think ultimately on the ice probably doesn't have too much of an effect, the words, but Marchand's actions absolutely do, because he clearly has gotten under the Leafs' skin and in their heads.
It's so blatant. Like, it couldn't be more obvious. Like, it just couldn't go this way. And you said it, like, Leafs, the way this whole, I can't believe it. I really can't. I cannot believe we're at this point. And I'm going to say it a lot over the next couple of days, where this is far from over. We did this last season. This is far, far from over. The Leafs are still dangerous. And last game's the hardest to finish. When you get a team that is so what appears to be messed up like the Leafs are right now, it's dangerous. So I'll preface with what I'm going to say now to that, because this is far from over, and the Bruins have to be laser focused to close this thing out, because you don't want to go back to Toronto and start rolling the dice on game sixes and sevens. But all of that being said, I cannot believe that this script has played out again this way. And you talk about Leafs fans, but this is exactly how they lose every year. And I thought it was different. I thought they were a little bit more battle tested after winning a series last year. I thought the coaching would be better. It hasn't been. It's exactly what it always is up there, and I'm shocked that it is to this point. I'm shocked that the Bruins have been able to have it this easy to this point, and I'm curious if this whole thing, it's going one of two ways. It's either an absolute full-on implosion on Tuesday night in the Garden for the Leafs, or they get resolved here over the next 2 days. They come together and they use all of this negativity that just happened for them over 4 days and bring it together. But either way, it'll be this group, especially the big four or five, and the coaches will be scrutinized either way.
My frustration seemed like it was at a maximum in game four. There's shots of the Toronto bench, Marner's taking off his gloves, spiking him on the ground. Like, guys are bickering. And obviously, like, you know, that kind of stuff happens. You're just trying to communicate. But it came across as just such a high level of frustration that it seemed like, at least in game four, they weren't going to be able to get past that and be able to finish that game. But I don't see why in these 2 days they can't quell that level of frustration and get their heads to a place where, like, okay, our season's over if we don't play well in Boston in game five. And they've been playing better against Boston. I know they haven't, you know, they only have the one win against Boston this season. It was at TD Garden, but their record against Boston and Toronto for whatever reason has not been good.
No, it's been awful.
This is what it was. They've lost six straight playoff games on home ice and have been outscored 21-11 in those six games.
Yeah, and that's against anyone. So that's going back to last year, that Florida series. You know, in that sense, like, if you're the Leafs looking for any silver linings at all, getting out of Toronto is probably good for them. 2 days between games is good for Austin Matthews to try to get better. It's good for William Nylander to get another full practice under his belt. Could be good for whichever goalie's going to be in there. We haven't even gotten to this, but they pull Ilya Samsonov after the second period. They go to Joe Wall in the third. We'll see if my guess is they're probably going with Wall game five. You think so, Razor?
Yes, I do, yeah. I think that's an easy change up for them. That's an easy difference than everything else that we've seen. I mean, Samsonov kind of lost it for them on that Frederick goal in game three. He's just not, he's not good enough. All of the reports that I got about him going into this series, too aggressive, et cetera, have all come, you know, gives up bad goals at random times, can't stay focused, can't stay consistent, doesn't prepare well enough, can't get to a spot, slides too much. All of these things that I got.
Bad report card.
No, yeah, and listen, he has great mental toughness. He has very good athleticism. We saw that in game two. Like, there's positives, but all the negatives that I was told to look for have come through in the four games. So I'll get to Joe Wall's negative list that I was given as well later if necessary. But
I'd like to hear it.
Certainly that's an easy valve. Again, they're looking for anything. So yeah. So the goalie is the easy one. Joe Wall will play game five.
Yeah, and it's once again you're saying the narrative seems to play out in a similar way this season that it has in the past for Toronto in the playoffs, because it's goaltending having issues has been a narrative that's just continued.
No, you're right, and that's it too. I I've done a million interviews over this series, and I said we're going to see four goalies in four games. Like, but we're going to see four goalies in four games. I can't believe it actually happened again. Like, it was so obvious, that it was, it probably shouldn't have happened. But sure enough, here we are, and we've seen all the goalies in this series. It's just, I can't believe how it's all lined up the way it has.
Well, and if you look at the numbers, like Swayman, number one in the playoffs in save percentage, .956. Ilya Samsonov, way down, 13th, .883. If you wanted to dive into the advanced metrics, this is according to Natural Stat Trick, and, you know, I don't think these stats are perfect, but just gives you an idea. Jeremy Swayman has given up four goals in the series, 9 expected goals, so that's 5 goals saved. Ilya Samsonov has given up 12 goals on 10 expected goals, so that's 2 worse. So that's a 7-goal swing right there. Like, again, just one metric, but that feels about accurate. Like, if you said, yeah, goaltending has been a 7-goal advantage for the Bruins in the series, that feels about right. And, like, that is about as decisive as you. I talked about special teams off the top. Like, that's clearly been overwhelmingly decisive in the Bruins' favor. So is goaltending, which is what we expected going in. But you can't assume that, right? That the Bruins should have had a goaltending advantage over Florida last year, and it didn't play out that way for all kinds of reasons we don't really have to revisit. But this year, in this round, in this series, it is very much playing out that way, where it's just such a glaring, obvious advantage for the Bruins.
Well, and obviously the Frederick goal was one of those goals that should have been stopped that metric is talking about. But what was the other, like the Carlo goal that goes in that they're saying?
I mean, it might even just be like half a chance. Like, yeah. You know, it's not necessarily like a direct one-for-one, like this goal he should have saved. But, you know, even last night, though, Razor, you talk about him like overcommitting or whatever. Like,
oh, he was way out of place by the Marchand goal.
Yeah, he's way at the top of the crease, clearly playing shot. Well, for McAvoy,
the Van Riemsdyk goal is not very good. Yeah. It's a really bad goal. That goal would not have been scored on Swayman or Allmark. And so again, you can, like, it's half a goal a game. The Frederick one's obvious. That's one goal right off of that stat. But it's all the little plays that have happened. It's the one blocker save that he needed to make in game one. And then. Of course, if he had made the save against Frederick in game three, that's 1-0 in the third, then DeBrus probably doesn't score. Then, like, it all backs into how the game's played. Because, again, if you're getting random shots at 3-0, that's easier than being down 3-2 or 4-2 and goals go in more. So it's just been his game management. He was great in game two. He made the big save in game two against Marchand early in the third that allowed his team to win. He didn't make any big saves for the Leafs in games three and four, and the Bruins were able to take advantage of it. So, again, that's why Bruins have to stay laser focused. Joe Wall should be better. There's a lot of ways that technically he's better and harder to score against, and he's going to be fresh, and he's going to be ready, and it's up to him. So the Bruins have to be laser focused that they're not getting any free goals on Tuesday night.
I'm curious, though, what are the things that you were told that they could maybe take advantage of.
Lots of traffic, not very good with traffic, so the Bruins have to do a better job of that. And they're going to have to do a better job, let's say, if they get through this series against Florida, getting shots through. The Leafs have blocked a lot of shots, and they're not very good defensively. So, and there hasn't been a lot of point shots and tips from the Bruins. So they have to do. They're going to have to be better at that against Florida because they're just not going to get the chances that they've been given by a good Florida team. They give up nothing. You have to create by being chaos. But against Joe Wall, he's really bad on screenshots. One of the worst in the league. Screenshots, tip shots, and high blocker. He doesn't do a good job with his blocker. Everywhere else, he skates really well. He stays inside of his crease. He isn't over aggressive like Samsonov. So it's certainly a different look.
Yeah, and so since we got a text, we might as well just do this now because someone asked, any chance they go back to Allmark in game 5? No. Simply no. Especially not with 2 days before the game. Like,
again, yes.
Can that person text back in again? And I'm curious, like, no, and I'm dead serious. I'm curious if that question is because they want to see Allmark. Like,
no,
do people want Allmark
so.
To come back in?
Or the rest like, of the text says, or do you put a nail in the coffin in Allmark? So I think that they probably were leaning towards they'd be a fan of Swayman.
Okay. Yeah, I'm curious, like, why? Like, Swayman's literally the best goalie in the league. He's 25 years old. Like, he can play 4 games this week. He's completely fine doing that. So, no, it's just like, and listen, I am completely on board. If they win this series, you put Allmark in game 1 if you want to. If they wanted to do that, you could find a way to somehow convince me. I wouldn't do it. You could find a way to go both guys in the first 2 games down in Florida. If you really wanted to see both guys, but I think we're seeing how important it is to have a goalie who wins hockey games for you, and you play the guy who can do that. It's not about rest and looking ahead and feeling good. It's you don't mess around with the playoffs, and you win games when you can win them.
You know how you'll get more rest if you put Swayman in game 5. The Bruins win, and then you know you don't have to play a game 6 and game 7 in the series.
You go for the kill shot.
Yes.
Like, yes. I was as pro rotation as anyone for 2 years, but like. It's over. Like they picked Swayman. They already ended it, and the Leafs can't beat them. They literally have not beat them all season, 6-0. So, no, you know, listen. I might if you told me the Bruins are going on a run to the Stanley Cup final, I might still have. I think at some point you're probably using Allmark again. I don't know exactly when it would be, but I would have some questions about whether Swayman holds up for 4 rounds, right? Just because we haven't seen it yet, but. For the rest of this series, again, with the 2-day breaks in between, like, he should be fine. There shouldn't be any issue there. So, no, you're riding him. We got to get to a break here, but you can join us, 617-779-7937. Text in 37937. We will be right back.
How did you feel that went?
Well, he was really good. What went into the decision was, we rotated the first 2 games, and then Swayman played so well, there was, you know, we were going to go with the hot hand.
You're going to stay with the hot hand again for Tuesday?
I don't know, Tara. I'll find out on Tuesday.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue. I'm Scott McLaughlin. And that was Jim Montgomery after the Bruins' 3-1 win in Game 4.
He knows we have to ask, right? Like, he knows that.
Sure.
Even though, and we know, he's not going to tell us.
And also, we all know they are continuing to ride the hot hand in Game 5. But you know, he's not gonna announce it. You know, that's interesting. Like, I do think that legitimately might have been the plan, just because it makes a lot of sense, right? Like, give each of them one of the first 2 games, and then evaluate from there. Like that made all the sense in the world. The only reason I wondered if we might see Allmark again in Game 4 was. If you go back to early April, I think it was a Saturday game, the Garden, before the game, Montgomery was asked, you know, how he might approach a playoff rotation or what it might look like. And he said, I think if we committed to it, it would go game 1, game 2, game 3, game 4, and then we'd go from there. So that just made me wonder if, like, going into the playoffs, did they already commit to it through four games? Like, did they tell both guys, hey, we're rotating through four?
Well, they clearly decommitted from that after game three.
But I actually think I believe Montgomery when he says that wasn't the plan. I think the rotation was two games and then evaluate from there. Like that just makes more sense to me, because committing to something for four games, it, like, four games is an eternity in the playoffs. Like, that's
Razor's giving you a side eye right now.
Of course, this is what I've been saying for 2 months, that four games is too long. You can't give away games in the play. That's why you don't do a rotation. I'll give you a pass, Scott, because I really like you, and somehow you've talked your way into it, and that's okay. But anybody on that Twitch or on that text thing or whatever it is, and you know who you are out there, who is clamoring for rotation and saying rotation, who now says, well, yeah, two games is a rotation. No, 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 no. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to jump on this bandwagon now. You're off. You're out. Rotation was at least four games. I heard people go through the six games and then pick the best one for game seven. No, a rotation, you had to at least get through four games for it to be a rotation. If you say that, yeah, I was right because I said they were going to rotate after what they've just done, no way, yeah, Jose.
I'm not saying you.
I'm not. No one has to. I'm saying the people that were absolutely off, like going crazy, that it has to be every other game, no matter what. I don't care if this guy gets a shutout and this guy. You have to see it because they can't play. They get tired playing back to back games, like all of this stuff. That's all I'm saying. Rotation has to be four games. It had to have been four games. Now we'll never use the word rotation ever again. And listen, we're going to see Ullmark again. These guys are going to go on a long run. They're going to go all the way through the conference finals, maybe the Stanley Cup finals. We're going to see both goaltenders play. Ullmark's going to have to win a couple games for them to win the Stanley Cup, and it's going to be a wonderful thing. But we're not going to use the word rotation.
That's right, Scott. You're out.
If they go on a long enough run, I think I'll find somewhere in there that I can bring it back, but it's not right now.
Trying to
you
can
say both goalies.
Again.
Both goalies works. Just the word rotation. So you're going to have to, like, you're much smarter and much better with words. So I'm sure the thesaurus has another word for rotation that you can use that you can fool me with. You'll
synonyms.
Be able to fool me with, like, some fancy word that's the same as rotation. And I'll say, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. I believe you can do that, but it can't be the R word.
And for the record, and Bridget can attest to this, on the podcast, I did actually say, like, I would have gone with Ullmark in game four, but I think that's most because I was just locked into the take.
Yeah. So, like, that's okay.
But like, I know.
It's not wrong, right? Like, that's not wrong, because technically, if you watch that game four, Ullmark would have won that game, right?
Yeah.
Like, Ullmark would have won that game. Swayman didn't have to, like, Swayman made one good save on Nylander at the right time in the third period. Beyond that, it was 12 shots through two periods, really steady Eddie, because the Bruins played great. But it's just the presence, and you stay with the guy. There's no doubting that Ullmark couldn't have won that game. They could have done the rotation, but it just proved, like, you need to have a guy, and the players want the guy, and you don't mess with success. That's all. And again, that's I'm going to stay a little bit on your side for you, in that we will, like, Ullmark is going to have to play in the next round. He will. He's going to have to fit in somewhere, because it is a strength of this team. They recognize it's a strength. They recognize it's a change of pace for them, and they can use both guys in a good manner. It just, you just can't, they're not going to, I think they've proven and that they will not lock themselves into something. And it's going to be, you know, a little more performance based.
I found the word you're going to have to use, by the way. Just splitting time.
Splitting's too even.
I'll find something.
Well, actually, I did look it up in the thesaurus, and there's really not another good word in context. So that's really your only other option,
uh-oh,
Scott.
I'll invent something.
Yeah, there you go.
By the way, we have a text that said, "Imagine if Ullmark starts next game."
Well, one of them says, imagine if Ullmark starts the next two. I don't know how that's happening.
I can't imagine.
No, and this series was obviously, like, really set up perfectly for it to become Swayman's series.
Yes.
And it's a team that he's dominated. That dominance has continued into this series. You have 2 days between games 3 and 4, two more between games 4 and 5. Like, the schedule's perfect. The opponent's perfect. If Ullmark had won game 2, maybe he's in there game 4 to close it out, right? Like, then there wouldn't have really been as much of a reason to go away from it. And, you know, we've all talked about it on podcasts and shows. Like, Ullmark's not why they lost game 2. He was really good in that game. But they did lose the game. And they just haven't lost with Swayman. So even for the biggest pro-rotation person like me, like, at some point you just can't ignore that. You just can't ignore that Swayman is now 6-0 against this team. Like, it's too much.
How about this? A goalie pattern. Does that work? Could you use that?
So no, I'm gonna keep looking.
And just to stay on this a little bit, like, next round lines up for Ullmark's 3-0 against Florida this season. He's given up 5 goals in 3 games. He went through all of this last season. He's going to be a little more comfortable playing Florida in the playoffs and in that building down there, et cetera, et cetera. So there's lots of different angles where you can foresee a chance for Ullmark to get in next series because of all the same reasons why Swayman. But this is why also you have to take all of those things into consideration. Going into this series, it was very obvious. Jeremy Swayman, after game 1, it was very obvious that he plays well and is perfect for playing this Toronto team. It was very obvious. It would have been completely fine to run the table with him, win this series, and then Ullmark plays game 1 against Florida. Like, there's ways to do it both ways, so I'm glad we've gotten to this point where it's not something we have to really talk about. We just talk about how the goalie performance is, how they're playing, and know that both of them can give this team a chance to win going forward.
Okay, we got to get to a commercial break here, but hour 2 of Sunday Skate coming up. Before the Bruins get to the next series, they have to finish this one. So I do want to get into what they've learned from last year, how they finish this out this year, avoid the same mistakes, avoid leaving the door open. You can join in 617-779-7937. Text us 37937. We will be right back.
This is Sunday Skate with Scott McLaughlin, Andrew Razor Raycroft, and Bridget Prue on WEEI.
How much do you think the lesson from last spring will, you know, spur you on to finish the job right away?
Well, there's a lot of guys in our room that, you know, have gone through it just a little while ago. And, you know, it hurt. We're going to see how much we've learned because we'll see by our start on Tuesday.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate, hour 2 with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue. I'm Scott McLaughlin. That's Jim Montgomery talking about what the Bruins learned from last year when they were in this situation. They went down to Florida, won games 3 and 4 on the road, were up 3-1 in that series coming home. And, of course, we know what happened. They lost the next 3. Shocking first-round exit. This feels different because the opponent's different, but the Bruins cannot assume there's any difference. You know, you got to assume you are getting the best game the Leafs have ever played. Like, you start there, you assume that's what you're facing, and they do. They have to come out. Montgomery said it right there. You'll find out early in the first period, you know, if they have that level of desperation that they need. But listen, you saw it even just yesterday. You saw two teams that had a chance to sweep, Carolina Hurricanes against the Islanders. Islanders end up winning in overtime to keep that series alive. Florida Panthers had a chance to sweep the Tampa Bay Lightning. Lightning come away with a 6-3 win, keep that series alive. I know it's a cliche, but I think it's a cliche for a reason, that fourth win is always the hardest, that one to actually end a team's season. So, Razor, what are we looking for from the Bruins on Tuesday to know that they're ready to close this out?
Well, it is the hardest game to win. It there's no question about it. It's always the hardest. We saw that yesterday. We'll see that today. We'll see that tomorrow. I think and you say this year's different, right? But at this point exactly last year, we were saying look at Toronto. They're going to get Toronto. Can you believe they're going to get Toronto in the second round? Yeah. I can't believe it. Tampa's going to lose to Toronto, and Bruins are going to play Toronto. Wow, this is the greatest team in the world, and now it's all setting up for them as well. So at this point, I was as guilty, probably more guilty, because I believed in that team so much last season than anyone, that it was over. Like, it was 6-0 game five. It's perfect. They're at home. Everyone gets to cheer, like, move on to this series. So, yes, you always feel great after 3-1, and it's always very easy to look ahead for us. Hopefully, and I'm sure the players aren't, but for us, it's easy to look ahead, and I think it's important to remember. Because I know I felt really good last year. I'm not going to do it this time. I'm really not. And I think that is the one thing that's different, is that it's so recent. It's so recent for almost all of these guys. And the ones that it isn't recent for have either been a part of it, like a JVR or Kevin Shattenkirk, who have seen it, or a young guy who's going to hear it for the next 2 days. You cannot make a mistake. You cannot take this lightly. This is the hardest game. We have to be ready. So, in that respect, it's different. And in that respect, I think they're in a better situation because they won't have – I can't imagine one of these guys have looked past game five yet, and only because of what happened last season. So I think they're in a good spot that way. I think there's still some tinkering to do. I think being at home, I think they can, you know, move the rotate. You know, there might be some kind of roster changes to be made and just ways to continue to get better.
Yeah, I feel like there's the aspect of learning from last year as well, and not to look past this game, ways to shut down your opponent differently, more simple defensive plays, and also health-wise, last year, if you think back to where they were, Krejci was not fully healthy, Bergeron wasn't fully healthy, Trent Frederick was a healthy scratch, they were not willing to go to both goalies at this point in the series. And Lindholm had that fractured foot that didn't come out till after the season, that he was dealing with an injury there. And then there was, you know, a few bad games by some of the defensemen. Clifton had a bad one. And it just feels like we're not seeing that right now, which is encouraging. That I know there's some injuries. I know Peak, you know, is week to week. Forbert, I don't know if he's going to get into the series. Brazo is week to week, but that's not your top two centers, which makes this pretty different.
Yeah, last year, Bergeron was just coming back into the lineup at this point. Game five was his first game in that series. And, you know, obviously if Bergeron gets clear to return, you're putting him in, but it did force some weird lineup changes. The way that they lined up for that game five was pretty bizarre, and it's because that was really the first time they were playing with their full lineup of the guys that they had acquired since the trade deadline. Like, after that trade deadline last year, they never had their full lineup until game five. And you know, Montgomery couldn't really figure out who went where. This year, it does feel like the lineup's a little more settled, just in the sense that you kind of know what their A and B is. There's no big minutes player you're reintroducing or trying to fit in at this point. So you can tweak it, and we've seen that in the series. And I think now's probably a good time to get into some of the lineup tweaks that Jim Montgomery's made, because so far he's really pressed the right buttons at every turn, it feels like. You know, putting James Van Riemsdyk in ahead of game three, he's played well. He scores the first goal on Saturday. He has a screen in front on Marchand's goal. He's been active. You bring in Mason Lauri at the same time. I thought game three, Lauri mostly played well but had a couple glaring mistakes. Game four, almost no mistakes, and he makes a really good pinch Van Riemsdyk's goal.
His very first shift, it looked a little bit nervous, but after that, he really settled in.
Yeah. And, you know, changing up the lines, right? Like, moving Heinen down in the lineup, DeBrusk up because he was playing well. Morgan Geekie moves up to play with Coyle and Marchand. You know, knowing when to put Lindholm McAvoy together for a shift here or there, when to keep them apart. Like, all of it feels like he's more or less gotten everything right. But, Reza, you mentioned, you know, maybe a couple tweaks. Just what are you kind of looking at as, you know, areas where maybe it's not 100% settled?
Yeah, I think on the back end, you can look at Forbert taking warm-up the other night as a sign that that's kind of like the next step for a player who's ready. I want to see Forbert. I think they need Forbert. I think he's a huge piece of this back end, especially, I'm not looking ahead, but if you look at a Florida, a Rangers, Carolina, you need a big, long, strong defenseman to continue the penalty kill doing what it's doing. I think at times when you see Lowry killing penalties, you know, a McAvoy, Lindholm, or Carlo takes a penalty, and now you're using Wotherspoon with Shattenkirk or Wotherspoon with Lowry, that Zibanejad is going to eat that alive. I think you need to find a way to get Forbert in the lineup. I think him taking warm-up last game, I think game five gives you a perfect opportunity because the Leafs have proven that their down-low team, it fits Forbert. He can be nice and simple. So Shaddy, unfortunately, didn't do a lot on the power play over these three games. That unit hasn't been as good. Lowry's there. Maybe you kick him to PP2, and that's where you get that extra minute. It doesn't affect what Lindholm and Carlo are doing, and you get Forbert in with Wotherspoon.
That's what I was thinking, too, with Laura. I was like, I don't know if that's just too aggressive with him being a rookie and only having now two games under his belt in the playoffs. Is it too aggressive a move to say Shattenkirk out? Which, by the way, Shattenkirk has not been getting a lot of time, and he has, when used on the penalty kill, not looked super effective. But
It's not his fault.
But that therein lies the problem. Like, you need a guy that can go on the ice and do that. So, and that just means you need to plug in a new guy on that power play unit where Lorai has been effective. We've seen Lindholm do it in the past as well, but I feel like Lorai could be a more aggressive option for them if they're willing to take that risk and have him be, unless they do Lindholm Lorai, like as a, if you do three forwards, two defensemen, I've seen them do that earlier in the year. It'd be interesting to see Lorai in that role. And I've been impressed with how he's progressed and learned throughout the playoffs. And I think he was more effective than Grizzlick. So I'd be curious, Razor, do you think that switch is going to remain for game five, that Lorai over Grizzlick still makes the most sense?
Well, I think he's played the two games. I think, again, Lorai's issue isn't being on a power play. Lowry's issue is the backhand passes, the soft plays in his own zone that we see. So him being able to take minutes there and then having a Forbert to play more defensively, and you bump Lowry down to that kind of 10-minute mark like Shaddy's played in different situations, especially if you have a lead in the second and third period, then it works out kind of perfect. So Grizz, we'll see Grizz. I think he's just kind of, the way Wotherspoon's played, it's impossible to take him out, especially just kind of what his skill set is just so different. And you can't go Lowry, Shattenkirk, Grizzly. Like, there's just too much of one thing and not the other. So I think that's, again, where Forbert kind of checks into this, is he does something a little bit different, and he shores up some of those penalty kill minutes that they're giving to and splitting between Lowry and Shattenkirk if they have to with the penalty from the other guys.
Well, yeah, and Wotherspoon, I mean, he's playing real minutes. 19 minutes game three, yeah. 18 in game four. Lowry bumped up too. He went from 14 in game three up over 17 last night. So I'd say both of them are definitely staying in. That Shattenkirk spot, that is the one spot on defense where you might make a switch. You know, Shattenkirk's ice time's been down 10 minutes game three, 11 minutes game four. And has to be noted, at 5-on-5 this series, he's been on for 3 goals against, 0-4.
He finds himself in front of the net on every goal. It's great. Like, and it's not really his fault. Like, Marner makes a great pass in game three and Shaddy's sitting there. Last night, Marner makes a great play, threw his legs around, but Shaddy's right there. Like, you see 12 right there, and it's been a little unfortunate for him on those dashes, but when it continually happens, it's like, okay. And again, well, with Forbert there, it's just, you know, you got to get Forbert into a game, and this seems like a good spot.
It could, yeah. So that's a good point. I would say, you know, on home ice for game five, you can probably do a better job keeping Shattenkirk away from Mitch Marner.
Correct.
At 5-on-5.
That would help.
You know, the one thing I think Shattenkirk has going for him, and Reza, you touched on it a little bit earlier, but getting shots through, he might be the Bruins' best defenseman at doing that.
No question.
So, like that, you do have to consider that as well. And it hasn't paid off, you know, in goals this series or assists off deflections or rebounds. But we have seen that from him at times this season where it has led to those greasy goals. So that's.
And that's what you're saying with Wohl.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I am saying that. You can't put a guy in just, but he, I think that's going forward, you're going to see Shaddy still because he does things like that. There's times where he can create offense. I think right now, and in game five, I'm looking ahead at game five. I'm not thinking, okay, we've got to find a way to score more goals. We've got to find a, you know, we can play this game by winning 3-1 again. And that's kind of where that little change on the back end up front. Dan Riemsdyk, does he check back out at home, or is he just a road player? Is he in for good? I think he's in after the way he's played. Of course, Lauko's still out. Beecher didn't play very well last night. Really had a tough game. Only 1-for-7 in the dot. Only played 10 minutes. Does he check out? Lauko check in? But otherwise, up front, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of spots open. Beecher's kind of the only guy after game four that I would look at, and even with all that he does for the group and for different ways of playing, it's hard to take him out too.
Yeah, we can definitely get into the forwards more here. We have to catch a break, pay the bills. Again, you can join in 617-779-7937. Text us 37937. We do have some texts I want to get through coming up here. But Bridget has you trending, and then we will be right back.
What's the level of frustration in the group as we saw some stuff on the bench today?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any. You know, we're grown men. We're talking about plays out there that we just want to make sure we're all 100% on and, you know what we're doing. Just a little bit off page there. And we're not yelling at each other because we hate each other. We just want to all be on the same page to help each other out to, you know, try to get the best offensive chance. And didn't work out that one opportunity. But, I mean, Willie and I, and Austin, we talked about it after. You know, we're just trying to make a play, and fortunately enough, it didn't happen on that one.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate. That is Maple Leafs forward Mitch Marner talking after game four. You know, it's always a good sign when you have to say the words, "We're not yelling at each other because we hate each other." That's always a sign that things are going well.
But we were definitely yelling at each other. I mean, it was very clear. It was caught. I think Sportsnet had some shots I saw of it after, because we watched it on Nesson, so we didn't have all of the angles that they had on Canadian TV of them on the bench just losing it. But Marner just straight up spiked both his gloves at one point. Nylander, and it seemed like there was an argument there, and Matthews, and it just seemed dysfunctional.
For sure. And on TNT, too, Paul Bissonnette was ripping Marner.
Yeah.
In particular at the second intermission, highlighting some really bad-looking shifts that he had, just kind of drifting around. Of course, Marner does end up scoring the Leafs' only goal, but...
Yeah, I saw Bissonnette ripping him. I was a little surprised at how hard he was going at him.
Well, I mean, it's Biz. It's Biz. He's selling. Listen, it's good. It's, don't get me wrong, it's good for hockey, but he's also he has a vested interest in the Leafs doing well, and he has a vested interest in ripping Marner and being the voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs. There's an angle there.
And listen, I understand that it's an entertainment business at the end of the day, and sometimes you go a little bit over the top to make a point because it's entertaining.
Well, and like I was just saying with Leaf Media, they jump on real easy. So it's easy, you know, he wants to, you know, it's good to rip. If you're around the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's good to rip Mitch Marner today. It's beneficial for you to do that rather than stand up for Mitch Marner. So there's part of that. Listen, players, it's not that them yelling at each other and stuff is not why they're losing. There's some frustration in that, but you'd be players don't really love when media come in and ask about a fight on the bench, because there's lots of fights on lots of benches, whether it's, you know, a player telling a coach staff, like, there's lots of that going on a winning team, let alone a losing team. So you're not going to get a good answer, because players really get defensive about that, because there's no context that can actually, you can't actually answer the question properly without going into personal details and explain, like, there's no way to answer it. So you're going to get a weird defensive answer almost 100% of the time when it comes to that. And you heard Keith being defensive. Like, he was defensive of his guys about effort and talking about that, because people want the juice and they want to try and break you up. And again, lots of teams fight. Everybody tells each other to, you know, we've seen it we saw Marchand and Pasta go at each other all the time when they were playing with Brad Marchand or with Patrice. They'd come off a shifted period where David did something, Brad didn't like it, Brad's yelling at him, David's yelling, like, it just how it works. So the Leafs, again, it is a sign of frustration, but they've got real issues. They've got real issues, to try and keep this series alive.
Well, and not just keep the series alive, but keep that team, that core alive. Like, listen, we obviously, we're a Bruins show, so we focus more on the Bruins, but they're facing the Leafs right now, so it's worth talking about the Leafs. And it also affects what this division's going to look like going forward, because I'm reading Chris Johnston in The Athletic from this morning, and Chris Johnston, more league insider type than hot take artist. You know, like, I don't think he's out there just firing off hot takes. But his column this morning, this is the end of the Maple Leafs as we know them. Just part of it. Barring an unlikely and unexpected comeback down 3-1 in a first-round series to the Boston Bruins, this was the end of the Maple Leafs as we knew them. There is no conceivable way to run this back. It hasn't worked and isn't working. Like, that's not just a coaching change. That's someone from that core four is out. That's like changing the entire makeup of the team. Listen, this entire Toronto team is built around offense, right? Like, all their highest paid players are, you know, throw Morgan Riley in there from the back end, but even he is an offensive defenseman. He's not Charlie McAvoy.
Well, the Bruins were really in on John Tavares a few years ago, so maybe John Tavares is coming here. Center Iceman, yeah, interesting.
But, you know, but the Leafs are entirely built around offense, and they have 1.75 goals per game in this series. Bruins are beating them with goaltending and defense. Like, it's a clash of styles. It's a clash of the way these teams are built.
They trying to trade for Allmark in the offseason? Get a better goalie?
There you go. Let's start that rumor.
That's it. There you go. Tavares for Allmark. Straight up. Done. July 3rd.
There you go. You heard it here first. No. I mean, they do need a new goalie. And
clearly. Among other things.
Yeah,
You think they'd be probably just, you know, testing the waters on that as well as with other goalies. But worth the call for them. Obviously, the Bruins probably wouldn't want to move Hallmark within the division. So
no. We can't do that. Let's stop that now, because that will end up somewhere and I'll get in trouble. Like, no, that's not gonna happen. I'm not being let you do that with me sitting here. But no, it's not happening. Let's see Hallmark win game series 2.
So Reza, this seems like an obvious question now because the Bruins are up 3-1.
Yeah,
but are they the better team? Should they be up 3-1?
Well, it's the special teams that really flip it. That's where, like, if you throw those, I would say no until you throw out the special teams numbers that you did to start the top. The PK 1-for-14, the power play 50%. Okay, yeah, that team's winning. You know, Team X has got this, Team Y's got that. X is always winning a playoff series through 4 games. If those are the numbers. So I think we've seen, you can see, and again, this is why the series isn't over, because you can see how the Leafs are dangerous. Like, there's times where they push, and I think that the Bruins haven't had many of those pushes And they haven't had to because they've had the lead the whole time, but they haven't had those three, four shifts in a row where they're dominating, and that we have seen the Leafs have. And you mentioned it last night even, like as bad as the Leafs played, they had the best three shifts in the middle of the third period where their goalie had to make more saves than the other guy. But again, it just goes... I said I thought the Leafs were better than this. I really did think the Leafs were better than this, but the special teams, you couldn't have predicted them be this bad. Like, it is absolute worst case scenario for any team what the Leafs special teams has been, and that's just unsurmountable. You cannot come back from that.
And probably why officiating has been highlighted by Sheldon Keefe, because if you can't handle killing off those power plays or killing off those penalties and you can't score on the power play, then a game that has a lot of penalties isn't really what you're looking for. Like, that he, and obviously with those comments, he was probably just trying to force the hand a little bit, try to get a little bit better treatment. But I thought the officiating in both those games in Toronto were bad both ways. I don't know if there's any reason to it, but the precedent that was set early in both of those games was just weird, and hopefully it's better for game five.
Yeah, and ultimately on the series, the number of power plays have been basically even. Toronto's had 14, Boston's had 13. Like, yep. You can complain about its call here and there, but in the grand scheme of things, you can't argue that it's been lopsided. Either way, it's what both teams have done with their power plays.
Correct.
And I would also highlight the Bruins 5-on-5 defense. Like, I think you'd still like to see the Bruins produce more 5-on-5 offensive chances, but look at the chances allowed. So, yeah, and this is natural stat trick. High danger chances allowed, 5-on-5. Game 1, the Bruins gave up 15. Game 2, 10. Game 3, 5. Game 4, 6.
Have we seen an odd man rush? I don't remember the last Leaf odd man rush, like straight on 3-on-2, no 2-on, there hasn't been a 2-on-1. There's the breakaway from Matthews in game 2. Beyond, like, in Toronto, when you really like, and I haven't thought about it until you just said this right now, I don't remember a chance off the rush.
I think Nyes had one
on the goal.
Yeah,
that Marner made the pass.
Yeah,
so that was a bit of a 3-on-2. So,
but
yeah,
that's my point.
We're like racking our brains to think of one.
I had one note early in the third period. I thought the Leafs briefly looked like they might have a 4-on-2. And by the time it got to the blue line, the Bruins had closed it off. Zaka had a good back check on Tavares. And that was the end of it. The Leafs didn't even get a shot attempt out of it.
So good. They've been so, to your point, so good 5-on-5 in the neutral zone, so good in the offensive zone, keeping pucks deep, getting, not turning pucks over, not allowing an easy breakout from the Leafs. And again, that's how, you know, as a goaltender and as a guy who's feeling really good about his game, if you don't give me 2-on-1s, if you don't give me 3-on-2s, the end zone stuff, the stuff in front of the net, I'm all over it. Like, that's easy for me.
Yeah, you're not. Swayman's been so good with that.
Yeah, it's easier. It's easier. It just is.
Let's go to Jay in North Carolina here on the phones. What's up, Jay?
Hey, guys. My weekly call. Hey, guys. If the Bruins want to get the Stanley Cup, they need to play like they played last night. But as I say, that second game they lost to Toronto, they were playing down to the other team's capabilities. And that frosted my bacon. But as I say...
I've never heard that one before.
Well, anyway... I want to see Omark in there, and I want to see the defense play in front of Omark the way they played in front of Swayman. They seem to have a different mentality. But if they play the way they played last night, they're in cahoots with the Stanley Cup, and they're gonna have to play the Golden Goons. I mean, Van de Hagen is a setup man. He's a good hockey player, but the rest of them are goons. And they got to play that. Thank God they got Pat Maroon and maybe Frederick. But as I say, the way they played last night, they're in contention.
Yes, sir. They are.
Yeah, thanks, Jay.
Never heard frost in my bacon before.
No.
I'm not going to lie. I'm going to have to look that up, what that means.
Sounds unhealthy.
But yeah, wait. Go to Razor, because Razor's immediate reaction was...
No, this is like, it's just the, why not, let's just enjoy Swayman playing really well. Yeah. Why can't we just enjoy Swayman playing really well, and then when Allmark goes in, he can play really well. It's that's it. Isn't it, like, am I being...
No, it's simple at this point.
It's just simple in general. Like, let's just enjoy the goalies playing really well. Like, it's not, you don't have to pick a side on this. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be an Allmark guy or just a Swayman guy. Like, it can be, we can just, let's go on a run here. Let's enjoy both of these guys. Let's expect both of them to play. Let's not try and parse, like, one guy getting bad defense and one guy getting good. You know, it's just that this is how it works. Again, I feel like that's why we still hear some of this, like, oh, let's put Allmark in game five, because somebody's like based themselves as an Allmark guy and they can't get off. It's like, let's just let that go, because we're going to see the guy who's playing best and winning games right now.
Well, and listen, it's, as I just highlighted with the high danger, like, it's true. The Bruins have played better defense the last two games than they did in game two. But I look at that and I think that's more a product of Austin Matthews had his superstar game in game two. And I honestly think, like, I'm not sure anyone would have stopped him that game. He completely took over. Now, he's been sick the last two games, so that's part of why he hasn't done it. The Bruins have also played good defense against him, and they've played good defense against the second line of Tavares and Marner. But, you know, Razor, I'm curious, like, if you think there's anything to this, because you do hear some of this of, like, they play different in front of Swayman than Allmark. Now, I think we're basing that on a very small sample size, because I don't think that's really been the case all season. But from a goalie's perspective, is there anything to that? Like, are there examples where a team plays different in front of one guy for whatever reason?
There is, but not in this situation. There is when Vasilevsky's in or Matt Tompkins in. There is when Bobrovsky's in. Well, now Stolar's been really good this year. But there is when Shesterkin's in or John Quick's in. There are circumstances that they're different. But no, because, and we're not allowed to do that, because that was the whole point of the rotation for anyone complaining about that, was that this team plays the same no matter who's in net. I heard that a lot. And it's true. It really is true. I think this place, the way the Bruins have been for the last 12 years, is that it doesn't matter who's in net. They play the same way. The goalies all feel it. And that's why we've seen four different Vezina Trophy winners for this group, no matter who they are. So, I don't think they've played differently. I think it just, you know, all games are different. So when you're going in and out, that's what you're going to get. And on a small sample size, like you said, it's one game, it's four games. So, but over the season, no, they do not play differently no matter who's in net. And yes, we got to get to this. I see you guys giggling. This is like going to absolutely sabotage the show with 19 minutes left. So
we have a call here that says Fourier.
Way Fourier's out of bed right now. He's still in Detroit.
What?
There he is. Are your hands free, right, Fourier?
Absolutely hands-free. I've been at a soccer game since 8 a.m. in the morning, okay, freezing my ass off, okay, waiting for Sunday skate at 9, and then what do I hear? Here's the thing, Razor, my comment is directed at you.
Of course.
You know, everybody else was saying real thoughtful, important things, and then I hear you talk, and I'm like, here's the thing with Razor. You're too connected and too attached to the goalie position that I sometimes don't think you can see straight what the big issue is. It's because you said that you don't have to pick a side. I think you absolutely have to pick a side. Either you are a Swayman guy or you're an Allmark guy. And I will ask you this question, Razor, because you're the smartest hockey guy I know in the city. And I mean that. Okay? Human nature does come into play. And my personal belief is that guys on the team favor one guy over the other. Don't you think that naturally happens?
That was actually a thoughtful question on Sunday morning for you. I'm impressed. Like, I'm absolutely impressed. And yes, of course, it's a great point. And I think that that's important. It is a great point. And guys, Fourier, you know it as well as anybody, and we all know it. We all want to be around and involved with the winner. The guy who's winning, it makes us feel better. And I think that's what goes in. There is a part of that. It's a small part, smaller part with this team than others because of how close both of these goaltenders are in ability. And either one of them can give you a chance. But certainly, when you see a guy win three games in 1 week, you're going to lean to that guy to win one more for you. So it is human nature. It's natural. You want the guy winning. And conversely, if you're the Leafs, you're seeing this guy lose every game for you. You're like, okay, let's switch it up and see if we can see the other guy. And again, that should give the Leafs a bump, and they should play better because they have a different goalie. Great question, caller.
Take a break. Let me see if I love it. When I get the good question from Razor, it means I'm, like, paying attention. Okay, here's what's going to happen, right? So Swayman has got to play again. You got to ride it out. If you're going to go with the hot hand for yesterday's game, you got to let him finish out the series. Ullmark will start the next series. He'll get the first game of the next series, and then you will be able to create either a new rotation or a new hot hand. That is my prediction.
I like it for you. You are paying attention somewhat. I'm not sure. It could be game one. It really could be game one in Florida, depending on this. Don't forget, just remember, like, it depends on when the series starts and everything. Like, there is a scheduling issue with that. And let's not, again, I'm going to keep saying don't get ahead of myself. So I sound like it, but you're allowed to, Fourier. I agree. I think you do see Ullmark in game one or game two of the next round. I couldn't agree more. I can't believe you're paying attention. I literally can't believe you've called in Sunday morning and you actually even know what the score of the game was last night, and you know that there's a possibility they could play Florida in the next round. I'm so pumped.
Fourier just found my path back into the rotation. That's
pumped.
All it took. It took a call from Christian.
Here's why. I know, because I'm afraid I'm going to get exposed now because Razor is so hyper-focused on every little detail. And God forbid Scott rolls in and starts putting me in check. I have to pay attention.
I know
Bridget would never make fun of me, would all protect me no matter what. Mm-hmm. Razor, on the other hand, whenever he gets a chance, he's going to try and cut me down.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We do need to catch a break, though. But, Christian, thank you for calling in.
I'll see you tomorrow morning, Christian.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Razor's
in tomorrow.
In, right?
I can't wait to see you at 10.
Yep.
Come for the crossover.
All right.
I will.
I know.
See you, Christian.
Girl.
All right. We do have to catch our last break here, so we will be right back to wrap up Sunday Skate. All right. Final segment of Sunday Skate here. Got the best call of the week out of the way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Most surprising, shocking call. Well, in a lot of ways.
It's playoffs, you know.
And we have a text, Fourier, the hockey insider. I agree with Christian.
Yeah, we also have some text suggesting names for where I can go instead of goalie rotation.
Yes, co-parenting the net was a good one.
Yeah.
Sharing, situational rotation, goalie allocation.
Goalie pairing, like wine pairing.
I like maybe goalie vortex.
No, you made that up. That's not on here.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
Nobody, okay.
Gets the people going.
Okay,
gets the
Will
people
Ferrell.
Going.
All right, so Bruins up 3-1. Game 5, Tuesday night at the Garden. What are we looking at when we're back here next Sunday? Have the Bruins, did they wrap it up in 5? Did the Leafs find a way to extend the series? Where do we think this goes from here?
I'm sticking with my Bruins in 6 prediction.
I'm saying they finish them off. I was a 6 guy too. I'd love to just stick with my prediction. I don't think it's good if they go to 6. I think the Bruins need to win in 5 or we're going to look at 7. So I'm saying they're going to close it out. Swayman is going to continue playing well. They're going to, just lock them down and find a way to the Leafs aren't going to go away though. This isn't a 5-0 blowout in game 5. This is a close game and the Bruins find a way to pull it out. So next week, we're probably talking after game 1 of the second round. That would be my guess.
Yeah, assuming.
I think they're going to move this thing along.
If
you
can't assume
anything, but yes, if the Bruins wrap it up in 5 and say Florida wraps theirs up early, then yeah, that they're not going to make those two teams wait a week.
And Carolina and the rain. Like the whole East should be wrapped up here in the next 3 or 4 days. And if that's the case, they're going to push the East along here. It looks like
that'd be like a Saturday game then. But obviously, if it goes seven, that game is supposed to be Saturday.
Correct. Yeah.
So then we're really just talking about talking after a win or a loss of a series if it goes the full seven.
It better not if you're the Bruins. Like,
well, no.
Scott, do you change your prediction?
Yeah, so I was originally Bruins in seven, but they should wrap it up earlier. Like, I think they should and will wrap it up in five on Tuesday. I agree with Razor, though. It's not a given. I don't think the Leafs are going to go down quietly. I mean, if they do, that only further cements that they are totally blowing this up this summer. But, no, I expect them to bring it, and I think the Bruins win anyways because I just think they have too much going, whether it's special teams, whether it's the goaltending. I don't think Joe Wall is going to be the Leafs savior, but we'll see. I do think he's probably going to get that chance at least. All right. That'll do it for this week on Sunday Skate. We'll be back next week, 9 to 11 a.m., either discussing the next round or, God forbid, discussing an unimaginable Bruins collapse. No. Let's hope it's not that.
No.
We'll talk to you then.